Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey listeners, today's special thanks goes to everyone who is kind enough to leave a rating on Spotify. In last week's episode, I asked for your help to get to 100 ratings on that platform, and you guys delivered. So thank you. You are awesome. Here's what's coming up next on the Liverbird Sailing Podcast.
We had in the first crossing some really ferocious weather, and you know, to surf a boat down a wave, you know, and then have it climb up to the next crest, that was just incredible. Bioluminescence, you know, the first time I saw that, I was just amazed.
Welcome to the podcast. I am your host, Annika. On the Liverboard Sailing Podcast, I chat with awesome people who live, work, and travel on their sailboats. My guests share inspiring stories and real-life advice about the lifestyle so that you and I can be better prepared for our sailing adventures. This week, a little bit of a different topic as we are talking about crewing on sailboats and superyachts. My guest is author Regina Meyer, whose book Change of Course is a tale of international adventures, sailing across the oceans, and a bit of a memoir of Regina's time spent living in Antigua. In this interview, I ask Regina about tips for anyone interested in being crew on other people's boats, how to avoid nasty surprises when choosing a boat to crew on, and Regina also reflects on the two sides of Antigua she experienced, living in a rural village with no electricity and working on a $50 million superyacht. All within a few miles from each other. Now here we go with Regina Meyer, author of Change of Course. I read your book, and from the first words of the book, I knew I would like it because you said something about how your goal was never to live an ordinary life and that you had kind of a fear of getting stuck in a situation or a place, and I can relate to that very much. And I'm curious, has that feeling of not wanting to be stuck in a place for a long time gone away over the years?
No, it hasn't. It's really funny because I remember working in a job in Switzerland when I was, you know, in my late 20s, and I remember talking to this man and about my travel dreams, and he's like, oh, you know, once you hit 30, this will all stop. And I just remember looking at him thinking, you know, what do you know? And I sort of thought, no, that's not going to be me. And it really hasn't, you know, like I have, it sort of fluctuates. I have periods when I travel more, and then of course there's periods when I travel less. But especially now, I haven't really done much traveling other than domestic travel since COVID started. And I'm feeling a massive itch, you know, it's just, yeah, there's something big still.
Another thing that really resonated with me was that you were born in Switzerland, but it felt that despite it being a great country, something was missing. And I was born in Finland, and it's such a great place to grow up. It's kind of like winning the lottery when you grow up in Finland, you know, healthcare, education, it's all free, it's good quality. But, you know, something was missing for me too. And I eventually left for Scotland to go to university, and you ended up in Australia, where I too actually lived for a little while. So I'm curious, what drove you to Australia? Because that is a far distance from Switzerland.
I guess I would say there was two major reasons for that. So the first reason was probably my insatiable curiosity. You know, I wanted to really explore and travel as far as wide as I could. And my ex-partner, Sven, who's also in the book, and I, we just returned from a trip to Australia and were living back in Switzerland. And I sort of thought, you know, we're heading up to 30. Now we get the maximum points for migration. And I sort of mentioned to him, you know, why don't we just give it a shot? I mean, we had nothing to lose, everything to gain. And that's what made this decision. Looking back, I also think the second part was probably the drive to get away from my roots. You know, I had a somewhat frayed relationship with both of my parents. And I think in order to make my own life, I had to gain some distance. And of course, you know, I needed the maximum distance in this instance.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I can relate to that feeling, being from a small town in Finland where everybody knows who you are just because you look like someone, you know, your sister or your brother or your parents. It's like, oh, I know who you are. So, yeah, there's definitely a big appeal in going somewhere far away where you can kind of start from new and nobody knows you and everything's different. And, you know, the whole sense of adventure as well. And that's one thing I really liked in the book, is that it's, you know, just full of adventure and really unique experiences. And you seem to have a bit of a spirit of adventure. And I'm wondering, is that something you can cultivate? Or is that something you were just born with, it that was there all along and you just kept feeding it?
Well, it was really funny because I was wondering that myself. And I remember at one point I was on the phone with my mother, and I sort of asked her the question, because neither of my parents, or really no one in my family that I'm aware of, are travelers. And I said, do you know where that comes from? You know, maybe a grandparent that I wasn't aware of. And she just started laughing. She said, no, you know, when you were 3 years old, I caught you, you know, she was looking out of the balcony down onto the road. And there I was walking with a little suitcase in hand. I really don't know what my plan was or where I was heading, but it sort of helped me accept that, you know, I wasn't this weird oddity. It was just who I was. You know, I wanted to obviously learn and explore, and it was that curiosity that drove me onward. So, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe curiosity is the driving force behind all of this. Like you said, you know, it kind of drove you to Australia in the first place, and then further along to explore the rest of the world more. And yeah, it's a really great thing to have, especially when you come from a, you know, smaller place. Like, I mean, of course, Finland and Switzerland as countries are quite, you know, they're not tiny, but they're great places to be. But, you know, because you're always curious, like, what else is out there?
Yeah, and also the confines of culture. I don't know how it is in Finland, but in Switzerland, like you mentioned before, it's, you know, there's a certain, you have to perform a certain way and you have to be a part of the system. And I just felt like, why? You know, why can't I do something else? And then when I was old enough to make the decision, I thought, no, I'm reading books about other people that travel. So, you know, I'm going to do the same.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously we mentioned that you moved to Australia and the book kind of focuses more on the time when you leave from Australia to explore a little bit more, maybe figure out what's going on in your life and relationships and your thoughts about all that. And this is where the sailing part comes into play here. And I'm really curious to hear about the sailing aspect that you had on this journey of yours, because you have now a fair bit of experience of crewing on all sorts of different boats, from different sailboats to super yachts. And of course, for many of us who are interested in sailing, being a crew member is a great way to get into sailing and get that experience without actually having to buy your own boat. So I would love to talk more about this. And you do talk about this in the book as well, but for the listeners' benefit, maybe we can start with, how did you find the crewing opportunities that you eventually got involved with?
So I was actually in New Zealand at the time, and I just had this dream that I wanted to sail, but my partner got really, really seasick, so it was never an option. And I was, you know, to sort of help me ease the itch, I was reading sailing books. And it was Jesse Martins, one of the youngest people to solo circumnavigate the world. I was reading his book, Lionheart, and there was a passage in there. And he was talking about how he went to crew on other people's boats to gain skills and experience. And I can tell you something, that paragraph absolutely blew my mind. Because I did not know up until that point that there was even a possibility to sail the world without owning a boat. And I had always assumed that, you know, wrongly, but I had assumed that to sail the world on your own boat, you have to also be rich. So, you know, I jumped onto my laptop and I looked up crewing websites, and I found quite a large number of them, some bigger ones, some smaller ones. And I put my profile up on quite a few of them. And within days, I got, you know, so many emails from the most exotic places. It was just really incredible. I mean, there was a man that was sailing from New Zealand to South America, a family in the Pacific. And eventually I settled on the boat in the Caribbean, because that way I could absolutely maximize my time.
Yeah. And I mean, you didn't have a ton of experience at that point. So I'm really, you know, surprised and, you know, positively surprised to hear that you did get a lot of interest in, you know, your postings or your profile, even with, like, you know, not being a, you know, certified yacht master or what have you.
Mm. Well, in my experience, what I found is that people are looking more for attitude and motivation rather than experience, because crewing, and I mean, I was only putting profiles up for leisure craft, you know, so for a holiday, and people were looking for guests or, you know, fellow sailors that would be willing to pitch in and help and learn about the sailing. And I think sometimes it's almost easier also if you are new to cruising or the sailing industry, if you don't have any preconceived ideas of how things should be.
Yeah, that's probably true. And also it might be even easier for those who you are sailing with, because then you don't have, you know, those kind of habits or mannerisms sailing wise that, you know, they don't like. You know, they like, you know, things to be done a certain way. And because you haven't done it before, that's the only way you know how to do it. So that's an interesting point as well, for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
But I mean, obviously, there are a lot of people out there looking for this kind of opportunities, and it's not difficult these days with the internet and, the world being relatively small in, a travel sense. But would you have any tips for someone who is looking to be or become a useful crew member, and maybe particularly on how do you choose? If you have multiple people contacting you, like, oh, come sail with me. So how do you choose, the boat and the people? Because, in the book you talk a lot about this, and we won't tell everything, but shall we say that you have a variety of experiences with the people you sailed with. So how do you pick out the good ones so that you don't get into trouble later?
Well, there's always a bit of a gamble to that. So, what I probably would recommend to do first is what I did as well, is I did a basic sailing course. And that's purely for the reason, before you spend all the money and travel somewhere, you want to know whether you actually enjoy sailing or not. Do you get seasick or not? If you get seasick, is it manageable? Do you still want to pursue your dream? So I think that, to have like just a handful of days of sailing experience at least to give you a bit of insight, as is that really what you want? Now, once you're sure that's what you want to do, you sign yourself up like I did. And then, yes, I got a lot of offers. For me, a lot of the selection happened by gut feeling, so you get an impression of a person through your contact. With people that I was considering closer, I would have Skype calls and, sort of see them face to face. It's also not uncommon to ask skippers for references of previous crew, or you can even then ask to exchange documentation so that you would send a copy of your passport, they send a copy of yours. One thing that I would definitely do if the boat is located in a, relatively remote location is I would always meet, or I would always insist to meet the boat in a port or a marina where there's other cruisers around. Just to give you sort of the peace of mind that you can settle in on the boat, you can meet the people, and if things don't pan out for whatever reason, that you can actually leave. I think that's imperative. You have to give yourself time to feel comfortable. And if it doesn't feel comfortable on a yacht within the first few days, ask yourself, is it just because you're, nervous about sharing quarters with someone new, or if there's something more sinister, going on? By any means, just step off. It's not worth it. It's only going to get worse once you're on the ocean. And I think also, bring plenty of money. And I don't mean that you need to have loads and loads of money, but give yourself enough funds to have a plan B. So if you need to fly yourself home, or you need to fly yourself to another country, or you need to stay in crew accommodation or a hostel for, a period of time, that you can do that. So there's no pressure to stay on the boat where you don't feel comfortable. And I guess the last thing is with boats, also more time. Often we live quite a fast-paced life. My experience is boats are fickle things. They depend on the weather and lots of things break down. So plan a bit of extra time to allow for any changes in the plans.
Yeah, those are really good tips, especially the one allow a little bit of time and also allow yourself a bit of a escape route in a sense, timing wise, and also like physically make sure that you're not, day two and you're in the middle of the ocean 50 miles offshore because you're already left. So that's true to kind of get a feel of the situation. before you commit to potentially weeks of crossing an ocean or what have you. And you're obviously more familiar with this whole crewing on boats concept. So are you aware of any sort of common pitfalls that might happen? Like, what are some common reasons where things just don't plan out?
Well, I think, people are people and people have opinions and, we have different expectations. And I think it's fairly common, for tensions to arise. Like, that's human. And I think if it's something that you can resolve, it's not a big deal. It's just, I often compare it to non-sailors as if you were to book yourself into an Airbnb and you come in, the hosts are in there, you lock the front door and neither of you leave for 2 weeks. That's an ocean passage. And of course, there will be tension. I mean, I have a funny story on the first transatlantic crossing. I went on deck with a tea and it was pretty rough day and I chucked the tea bag into the ocean and I must have chucked it into the wind, which carried the tea bag onto the deck and I didn't see it. And so the captain was next on watch and he saw a tea bag on the teak deck. It was, I think, green tea bag. But he got so upset and he started yelling at me and, I started yelling back at him and we were both really upset. And, what happened the next few days, we were just a little bit quiet with each other. And then it came back. And I think that's also really beautiful to experience, that you can have disagreements and tempers can fly, but you can also come back from.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So yeah, you mentioned you did a transatlantic passage, or two actually. And I mean, I think even just doing one is such a great achievement, because it seems like such a huge distance. And I'm curious if there's anything aside from that teabag incident that stands out to you as a memorable experience, in whether it's a good way or a negative way, or just something that's stuck with you through these years.
Oh, look, there's so many things, actually. I wanted to sail a major ocean. So when I had my sailing dream, it was never really to cruise among the islands. It was always about the open ocean. And, it's just the first time when you only see ocean and there's no land for days or no other boat for days. And to see that the ocean and the sky, they constantly take shape, they change shape, they change color. We had in the first crossing some really ferocious weather, and to surf a boat down a wave, and then have it climb up to the next crest, that was just incredible. Bioluminescence, but the first time I saw that, I was just amazed. I think by far for me, the beautiful and moments and the mesmerizing moments by far outweigh any incident that was challenging. I did for a while consider just doing deliveries because I love doing passages for that reason, just to have that infinite space, to be disconnected from internet, from anything, from culture, you know, from land life. So, yeah.
The second trip you did, the second ocean crossing you did, rather, was the Atlantic Rally. And I've talked to somebody on the podcast who organizes these rallies, and he paints a really lively and fun picture of what these events are. So I'm curious to hear your experience. What is the vibe at the docks and in the marinas when you're in the Canary Islands, I think where you left from? You know, there's maybe hundreds of boats who are leaving around the same time, all with the goal of crossing an ocean. So what's that like?
It was really exciting. Like that I would totally agree with what you said. It's lively, it's fun, you know, there's a sense of exuberance and excitement. Everyone's preparing, you know. I remember when we were provisioning the boat, and I was on a 50-foot yacht with some older gentleman that owned the boat, and we were so generously provisioning, you know, like we had stacks and stacks of fruit and vegetables, and everyone else around us was doing the same. So you really had this feeling of imminent adventure, you know, everyone was about to set off. And of course the start to the rally was exciting because it is set up pretty much like a race, and it is timed. So all those boats are out in front of Gran Canaria at the same time, you know, crisscrossing. And of course there's the race boats right at the front. And it was just exciting to be part of that, and to also do the radio roll calls every day to sort of hear how everyone's progressing, which yachts are nearby, and who's already arrived.
And it must be such a great arrival as well. Like the departures, I'm sure, is kind of a, you know, exciting and kind of a party. But I think the real party probably waits at the other end when you, you know, meet the people who you hadn't seen in a couple of weeks, and you know, you've done something amazing.
Yeah, that's right. And I would say that's one thing for the sailing community. They're always good for a party. And they're never dull.
That is true. Yeah, for sure. Well, actually, speaking of parties, and we were talking about crewing a moment ago, and I think it's also important to remember you share a lot of good experiences or good advice throughout the book through your own experience of occasionally just needing to walk away from a boat because it just didn't feel like it was a good situation to go across an ocean with someone. And we mentioned partying, and one of the instances you mentioned that like the boat was loaded with booze, which is, you know, generally not necessarily a good thing you want to have on an ocean passage, and all that kind of indicator. So it's probably a good reminder for anybody who's thinking about it, you know, be ready to walk away, whether it's having that backup plan, having the cash to go to a hotel or what have you, and just, you know, maybe having some sort of, I don't know, standards or something that you're aiming for, right?
I mean, you know, on the first boat I was on, for example, we did a walkthrough on the safety equipment. And I kid you not, but everything was expired. You know, the lifeboat, they have to be packed and checked regularly. That was expired. The grab bag, the flares, they were all expired. And I remember looking at that, and I was pretty somber, you know. I was like, really? And then, you know, I pointed it out, and the captain said at the time, he's like, oh, you know, we're not gonna sink, we're not gonna need it. And I sort of thought to myself, like, well, no one does, right? No one plans to sink their own boat. But so in that instance, we actually did have a conversation about it, and all of the crew sort of got together, and he did end up getting the lifeboat checked and got some new flares. And I think, you know, don't be afraid to speak up. I honestly think, and there is a time in the book where I walk away from a boat, and the boat makes it safe, you know, across the ocean. But you don't know. And if it's just for me as a rule of thumb, if you don't feel safe, you shouldn't go. You know, there's another boat. Find one that you feel comfortable with, that you feel happy with. Also, tensions like that, you know, when you don't feel safe or you're not 100% happy, they will carry on and they will magnify throughout the trip. So it's not going to be enjoyable for anyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not going to get better if there's already a little bit of a, say, personality clash or something. It's not going to improve after 3 weeks
in
a boat.
Right. Yeah.
Well, another interesting part in your book is that you talk a lot about Antigua, where you spent a lot of time, and you went back there a few times as well. And I'm curious to hear about your experience in living in a small sort of rural village in Antigua as the minority, as a white woman. And, you know, what were some of the occasions that made you realize that you come from a very different place of privilege than the locals do?
Well, I might just explain a little bit to the listeners that, you know, haven't read the book yet. So what happened when I was in Antigua, I met a local man at a dance party on a cliff, you know, beautiful sunset night. And over the course of a few weeks, I fell in love. And eventually, my life took a complete turn. So the relationship in Australia fell apart. And I ended up returning with the plan to Antigua to make a life there. And I moved into a tiny wooden shack, maybe 3 by 5 meters, with no electricity, no running water. We had a pit toilet in the backyard and, you know, a rickety shed to have bucket showers. It was very basic. I was doing the laundry by hand. You know, we had to cart our supplies on the bus. It was a very different life. But what struck me was that within, you know, a few weeks of getting to Antigua, I managed to get a job. And with that came a motorbike. So I had transportation. And it wasn't lost on me that in the village where I was indeed the only white person, that, you know, not only was I probably one of the people with the highest pay job, I also was only able to work 5 days a week, whereas most Antiguans are required to work 6 days a week. And I had transportation. It was one of the only motorbikes in the village, or car, you know, there was maybe one or two cars, not that many. And I just reflected on, you know, that simply having education and coming from a white background, it just means that I stand a better chance, you know, and I can't deny that. And that was also very humbling. Or the fact that, you know, my new partner there, Jay, that I was welcomed in the village and there was no questions asked. I was accepted for who I was, and it wasn't lost on me that if I were to take him to Switzerland, it would be a completely different case for him. So yeah, that was a lot of things in Antigua were completely thought-provoking and eye-opening for me.
Yeah, it's such a different experience, but I'm sure also kind of enriching in many ways too. You know, it really opens up your eyes, I suppose, or, you know, opens up your own viewpoint to, like, you know, to your own privilege, but also, you know, what the world is like in other places. But, you know, one of your jobs in Antigua was working on a super yacht, and that is quite the contrast. And I think that's what, you know, when I picture Antigua, and, you know, all I know is sailing and the regattas and the super yachts and the, you know, sunny climate. I can't even picture Antigua, but, you know, it's the Caribbean, so that's what I picture, is the super yachts and all that. How did you find, you know, balancing that contrast of, you know, having that connection to the I don't know, the real Antigua or the rural Antigua, whatever we want to call it, and then working for a non-Antiguan, essentially foreigner, on a super yacht. Like, how that must have been quite the internal battle.
It was definitely very interesting. So, when I got the job on the U super yacht, I moved onto a boat that was, newly launched. It had only done its maiden trip from South Africa to Antigua. And, it was a brand new $15 million yacht, and it was stocked with all the luxuries that you can imagine. And, coming from the village where my partner worked and earned $100 a week to this, it was often, I remember it was like culture shock, the sort of the hard life and this incredible opulence that was available to the yachting industry. So that took some time to adjust, but I guess what helped that I was a stewardess. So a lot of people think super yacht work's very glamorous. Let me tell you, it's not. The uniforms are, glamorous, but the job itself, I spent a lot of time on my knees, polishing and scrubbing, bathrooms and making immaculate beds. And that puts things back into perspective.
Did you ever get a sense what the locals like Jay would think about? What do they think about the contrast between, their own life and then all these visitors who come to their island, whether they're, the mega yachts people or just your, regular cruisers who also are just generally a lot wealthier than the locals? Did you ever talk about that kind of thing?
That question is kind of hard for me to answer because I can't speak for the local people. I know Jay himself didn't question it much because for him, I guess his life was just that, was his life, and the yachting life was other people's lives, and what each of them had, was pretty much none of his concern. And he was happy in his life. And I think oftentimes we associate, more wealth with more happiness, and that's just not true. So for me personally, probably different story. I questioned, if you have a boat owner talking about flying in lobsters or whatever, and I would go and visit Jay at the weekend where we would have, we didn't even have a fridge, no electricity, right? So it was pumpkins and carrots and whatever else we could find. It's just completely different worlds. And they coexist. Seem to coexist quite beautifully.
Yeah, well, and that's the interesting part of it, that they are both there and, and in many other places as well, of course. But you mentioned something about the super yachts that I thought that was quite interesting. It probably deserves a little bit of a highlighting that it's not as glamorous as it maybe sounds, but that's, with that caveat, in case somebody is interested in this kind of line of work, getting into the life on the ocean through super yachts. Do you have any tips on how to get with that? Is that through the same kind of crewing websites or is that through some different
They're
platforms?
specific platforms for professional work, and I probably would recommend to log on to those. But really, what I would recommend, and I have in the past, because I used to actually work in the boats here on the boats here in Cairns. So of course, we're just at the doorstep to the Great Barrier Reef. And I'd often would have, some of the younger crew come up to me and say, "Oh, what should I do?" And I sort of think, if you really want to work in the super yacht industry, go and get your STCW. That's nowadays pretty much prerequisite for any sort of job. And then again, save money and buy yourself a ticket, if you can, a return ticket to give yourself a little bit of a way out if you need it, to either Antigua or St. Martin in November or early December, you know, for the beginning of the season, or in late May, early June for the start of the Mediterranean season, and head for Palma de Mallorca. And, you know, make a resume, highlight your skills. It's not so much about having industry experience. Again, they are looking for people that are keen, that work hard, that are willing to learn, and that are happy to immerse themselves in this new way of life. So often times, if you walk the dock, as it's called, and you hand out your resume, you chat to people, you will actually be successful. I mean, I had no industry experience, and I managed to get a job in one day when I really, really needed it. And to me, that's perfect example. You know, I needed it, I wanted it badly, I went for it, and I got rewarded for it.
Yeah, exactly. So just pursue those opportunities. And especially if you're able to be there on site, that makes probably a lot of things easier. But so in your book, you talk a lot about these adventures and your life story, of which the crewing opportunities and experiences are a big part of. So where can we find the book and dive deeper into all these adventures?
So the book is available from my website, and it's shipped worldwide. That's reginapetramayer.com. If you order from the website, you'll get a signed and personally dedicated copy. Of course, you can also order the book on your favorite online bookstore like Book Depository, Amazon. And it's also available in any ebook shop. So, you know, Apple Books, Kindle, whatever. It's out
it's
there.
It's everywhere.
Should be relatively easy to find.
Exactly. It's not hard to find, especially because I'll put the links in the description so people can go find it just by clicking links. So we'll make it easy for you. But thank you so much for being my guest today and telling a little bit more about your experience. And the book is just a wonderful read. It's just a tale of sailing life and ocean adventures and land adventures and relationships and, you know, finding yourself and all good things. So yeah, thank you for writing that and sharing your story with us today.
Oh, thank you, Annika, for having me. Like, it's such an honor, and it's always fun to talk with, you know, fellow adventurers and sailors, and it keeps the story alive, and it sort of also instills more of a desire to go out and explore more.
And that's a wrap for this week. I hope you liked this episode, and if you would like to learn more about Regina's travels, go read her book. As always, thank you for listening. I really appreciate you tuning in week after week. If you want to come say hi, I'm on Facebook and Instagram as Liverboat Sailing Podcast, so don't be shy. Next week, it's time for something different again, so bye for now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.